A recent report by the Education Review Office has painted a grim picture of student behaviour, saying violent and disruptive behaviour in schools has reached critical levels. Half the teachers surveyed said the problem had become worse in the past 2 years, and half say they're spending nearly an hour a day dealing with bad behaviour. The Education Review Office, or ERO, says the trend is harming children's learning, and schools need to take a nationally consistent approach to addressing it. The approach it favours is called PB4L, which stands for Positive Behaviour for Learning. But a group of teachers in Porirua East who work with students with high levels of dysregulated behaviour say ERO is out of date and promoting ineffective, outdated practices. It says teachers need to understand the neuroscience that underpins behaviour and stress, and its programme called Hauora is working. Linda Knight is principal of Glenview School in Cannons Creek. She's founder of the Hauora program, and we've spoken with her before about it. Welcome back, Linda.
Kia ora, Catherine.
We're speaking to you, I guess, in the context of these kind of shocking figures that are coming out. And also, you hear this, you know you hear this in the sector, teachers who just are struggling to be able to teach because they are so often dealing with this. What is your view of the ERO report?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, ERO has done what ERO does well, and they have really captured, they've done a thorough evaluation. They've spoken to over 1,500 teachers, over 500 principals, and I think they've captured well this phenomenon that we have at the moment of levels of dysregulated behaviour that is causing a great deal of stress, not only to teachers and principals, but to students and their families as well. So that they've done well. What I don't think they are well placed to do currently is to provide the recommendations and the advice as to what we do in response to this problem.
Straight away, I used the phrase bad behaviour earlier.
Yeah.
And certainly if you're on the receiving end of it, that's exactly what it is to you. You're using the phrase dysregulated behaviour. Mm. What's going on, and why are we seeing such an increase, perhaps understandably post-pandemic, mm-hmm. but not just because of it?
Mm.
What's going on?
So I think it comes back to the science, and I think this is what we have missed as a country, as an education system, is that we have acknowledged there's a huge problem, and I use, whenever I say problem, I'm using quote marks, because we're talking about young people and don't like to sound deficit, same with behaviours. You know, we know there's a problem, but when we have a massive problem to address, we need to actually delve into it and look at, well, why have we got this problem? What's causing it? And I don't believe we've done that. And I think the answer lies in the science. I think it lies in human biology and, in particular, nervous systems. So the neuroscience around dysregulated nervous systems and stress response systems. So I believe that we're seeing these levels of dysregulated behaviour or dysregulated nervous systems for a range of reasons. So it could be children that have suffered PTSD or developmental trauma, but it could be children and young people that have lived with ongoing unpredictable high levels of stress. And many of our families and communities such as Cannons Creek have ongoing levels of stress, food insecurity, housing insecurity, etc. It could be due to a number of sensory processing and integration problems that a lot of neurodivergent children experience, a lot of autistic children. We're seeing high levels of dysregulation of nervous systems.
So actually, we do in part know, because we talk about all those issues, but then there's a gap between knowing there's a problem,
yep.
The problem being stressed children and the impact that has on their behaviour and then on the group.
Yeah.
But we don't bridge the gap between, yes, we know the reasons for the problem and we can't just magic them away, we would if we could,
mm-hmm.
but how do we deal with them? That's the gap.
Yeah. So I think the gap is because we don't understand enough about the science. So I think the people that have been doing some training and some learning in the area are beginning to understand the neuroscience and the fact that when children display these behaviours, they're not choosing to do them. They are in fight or flight or shutdown state, that survival part of the brain. So they can't access their cortex, their thinking part of the brain, to make good choices, to follow instructions, to solve problems rationally. So I think if we understand that and we understand the factors of the environment that are actually causing this dysregulation, and that may be you know, for children with sensory problems. It may just be an overstimulating environment. It all comes back to really that nervous system feeling safe, so having a felt sense of safety. We can look at a child and say, of course they're going to be safe, you know, safe environment, safe teacher. But it's almost an irrational, innate nervous system sense of safety that is the key here. And so feeling that sense of safety and feeling a sense of safe connection is going to make all the difference.
So what is it about the Aero approach and the PB4L program that you have issue with? What does it posit as the way to deal with this?
So PB4L is based on PBIS, which is an American approach that was developed in the late 80s and 90s. And then in New Zealand, the late 2000s, I think you may remember there was a big behaviour summit in 2009, which was educators and government coming together. And I believe out of that basically grew this response that is PB4L, closely based on the American model, but with some tweaks to sort of New Zealandise it. And the PBIS and PB4L are based on a behaviourist theory. So that theory is, if we want to change behaviour, we reward the good things that we want to see, and we punish or we deter with negative consequences. So that's what we're seeing in this report. We're seeing promotion of PB4L, and we're seeing a lot of talk about what they call logical consequences. But actually, for our highly dysregulated children, consequences aren't going to make a difference.
This goes back even further to the training of teachers, going all the way back, positive reinforcement and, you know, what is it? 8 or 12 positive interventions for every correction.
Yes,
but that's presuming a child in the state of mind where that logical reward system works.
Yes, okay. And they can make choices to receive that.
However many decades after that, even in this 2009 approach, it was still very much on we reward good behaviours and we essentially deter behaviours we don't want. And so how does that play out in, you know, 15 years later? How does that play out in what a teacher or a teacher aide or someone else or a principal would do with a child who's behaving in a way you want to change?
Under PB4L type approaches? I mean, there are a lot of good things that a school will go through when they go through the PB4L training. So they'll consult with the community and they'll set up a strong foundation of values, and that will be sort of the touchstone that everything comes back to. So I have nothing against that, and we retain some of those approaches ourselves. But I think when it comes to a token-based economy in schools, where some children are being rewarded for those good behaviours.
What are we talking about? I mean, at primary school, is it literally you get a star next to your name on the wall?
Yeah, it could be a points-based system, or they could get actual little tickets or tokens.
Okay.
And then they may trade those tokens in. For example, some schools call it golden time once a week when the children that have enough tokens get to have that free time.
So this is something, and again, parents might do this with their own kids at home. This is something that works when you're in a framework to be logical.
Yeah, yeah. Many children, it does work.
I want, and this is how I get it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
But where's it missing the mark?
Well, it's missing the mark for those children that, for whatever reason, are dysregulated.
And are they a growing proportion, or their experience is a growing experience?
It seems to be what we're hearing, is that we are. And
so tell me a little bit more about why your group of schools got together and you set up HORA and its background. Just remind us, I know we've spoken previously of it, but remind us why you went this route and what you learned.
So, I co-designed it with Catherine Burkett, that many of your listeners will know as a psychologist and neuroscience educator. So to be fair, she's co-founder. And I think we initially looked at the Manaake funding that was going to be coming into some areas of Wellington.
Which is what?
So funding for primarily for counselling in primary schools.
Okay.
So it started in Christchurch And it's been rolled out in other areas of the country. But we quickly realised that we couldn't access that funding because we wouldn't have registered counsellors or psychologists interfacing with the children. So we went on off on another tack. And to be fair, we did get a COVID urgent response fund grant at the start.
From the ministry?
From the ministry, from the regional office of the ministry, at the start back in 2021. And basically our premise was that our children are going to respond much more effectively and heal much better from some of these mental health issues if they spend time regularly with people that they feel connected to, that they feel safe and they trust, than they will with your registered qualified counsellor or psychologist who they might only see once every couple of weeks for half an hour, 45 minutes. Because it comes back to that nervous system regulating, feeling
so
safe.
So they need a trusted person in scope at school
that they see every day
to calm that system down.
Yes, that they see every day. So it's these, as Dr. Bruce Perry would say, it's these microdoses of relational connection. And ideally, someone from their community, from their culture, which we have predominantly throughout our schools.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So is that a one-on-one thing, or is it just you think about who is with that student consistently?
It usually works in small groups. So each school has identified usually two support staff, so we call them kaiārahi, so usually teacher aides. And then they've identified a group of usually 10 students that they have concerns about.
Are they in class with them? Like, how does this affect, pardon the phrase, the mainstreaming of the class? It doesn't require them being off in a group together, or sometimes
does it? It's flexible. So we've given schools a certain amount of autonomy to design it as will fit their context. So in some cases, children do come out for example, maybe an hour a day, half an hour a day, sometimes at the beginning of the day, just to have that time connecting.
That makes sense, but they're not off in their own part of the school. They remain attached.
No. Some of the schools have a room that is like a sort of a home room.
Yep.
And so some of the schools allow children, when they are feeling they're getting into that dysregulated state, go to their safe people.
It's a place to go.
Yeah, within the school.
Within the school.
Yes.
But for the most part, you're moving between being with your class, being with everyone else, and then going where you need to go when you need to go.
Yeah, and sometimes these kaiārahi are going into the class as well. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And flexibility, the schools themselves within your group, within your area, work on this.
Our bottom line is that we're funding the schools, and it's external funding that we have sourced from community organisations and grants. So we're funding the schools on a model of 12 hours of teacher aid time for every 10 students, so 12 hours a week. And one of those hours is non-contact time, so they have time to plan and prep and review.
How many students throughout the cluster, if I can call it that, have been through this or are part of this?
Well, currently we'd have about 120
at the current time.
At any one time.
Let's talk about results, because I think, how long has it been going for now, Linda?
2.5 years.
And I think you had an independent assessor through to do an assessment. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so we have gathered the data ourselves, the quantitative data, and we've looked at how often children are going into these dysregulated states and how long they stay in those states. So we had our own staff, particularly our learning support coordinators, talking to the teachers and the kaiārahi in each school and gathering that data. We collected a lot of voice, but then we worked with Judy Varco from Premium Research, who's done a short desk evaluation that captures the quantitative data and the voice.
So you provided the data, and the measure was how long students were exhibiting dysregulated behaviour.
And how often and how long
and
did they stay.
And what happened to, I think at the time of program entry, 17 students were exhibiting dysregulated behaviour daily or more often, lasting a day or more, so like all day. Okay. By the end of the year, just one of the students was exhibiting dysregulated behaviour daily or more often than last day or more. What have you done? So you would say this program is working without question.
I know, yes, I know it works. So in my own school, even before we started the Kahuyako program, our staff did a fair bit of training with Dr. Bruce Perry's neurosequential model, and we saw significant change. We probably going back to 2016, 2018, we were probably seeing 300 to 400 dysregulated behavioural incidents, quite serious ones, in a year. And then we went down in 2022 to 5, and last year to none.
So you're saying, actually, that program that Eero is promoting is demonstrably out of date for the challenges we have today. You're saying that you've shown there is a better way of doing this. Where are you getting and communicating this more broadly, with Eero or with the Ministry of Education?
Well, we did have Jan Tinetti come in to school
former
a couple
minister.
Of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, former minister. I have extended an invitation to the current mm-hmm. Minister of Education to come in and talk about this.
Have you heard back from her office?
From her office, I have. We haven't...
And it's a... Yes, I'm interested.
It's a possible.
Okay, keep going.
It's a possible. I have also, I mean, I have been involved over the last couple of years in some consultation type exercises with the ministry on things like the PB for Old Refresh, the stand down suspensions, exclusions guidelines, physical restraint guidelines. And my message to them is that, yes, we're seeing some good change. We're seeing some more kupu Māori in there and some more less deficit thinking in terms of the children. But we're just lacking the science, that whole piece around training teachers to understand the neuroscience.
What response have you had from the Ministry of Education?
I've had, so in meeting with them, I think they've listened, but no response in terms of making any changes.
You said specifically regional, you'd had some contact with the regional office of the ministry.
Yes, so to be fair, yes, so our Wellington regional office, to be fair, for the past 2 years has put some funding into training staff across Wellington in the neurosequential model in education.
But in terms of moving it up to the head office and saying, look, come and look at this for other schools.
Yes, nothing.
Thank you, Linda. Let's know if the minister comes to visit. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You, Catherine.
Linda Knight, who is Cannons Creek principal. I think you're actually
Glenview principal.
Beg your pardon, Glenview School in Cannons Creek.
Yep.
I think you're actually off on a sabbatical. Is this to do more study in this?
Yes, so my sabbatical is I'm going to England and Scotland, and I'm looking at secondary schools that have good practice in this area, because I feel like we know what to do in primary schools. We've done it, but it's a whole new ball game with secondary schools.
Thanks again. And we're, of course, talking about this in the context of the recent Eero report that has come out with teachers really almost crying out, really, aren't they? With the increase in violent and disruptive behaviour in schools, they're saying has reached critical levels. Half of the teachers surveyed says the problem has become worse in the past 2 years. Half say they're spending nearly an hour a day dealing with bad behaviour.